Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 35. Our guest is Carrie Wananen. Carrie is a multimedia content creator and freelance journalist for Esports Insider, based out of the Randstad, Netherlands. Carrie's story is incredible. Having grown up in Middle America, both figuratively and literally, in Colorado, spending his young adult life in China and establishing a relationship and life with his partner in the Netherlands. In this podcast, we discuss his journey from the early days playing video games to what esports is like in Europe. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox back with another Esports Business Network podcast. And today, our guest is Carrie, and I'm going to screw up your last name. So I'm going to ask you to pronounce it yourself. But welcome to the show, Carrie.
Hey, thanks so much, Trent. I'm Carrie Wananen. It's a hard one. It's got a lot of A's and N's. Yeah. So yeah, a lot of people don't know how to do it because it looks so strange and foreign.
Yeah, it's like the first time I saw it, I wanted to go A, and then I don't know why I would not go Ah. Wananen. Okay, got it. Carrie Wananen. What is the heritage of that last name?
It's Finnish.
Finnish. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. Except there's no...
Were your parents from Finland?
My father's grandfather is from Finland and came over to the United States. There is no W in Finnish. It should be a V. But then at Ellis Island, they thought that that looked too foreign. So to sort of Americanize it, they turned the V into a W and took the umlauts over the A's. So,
yeah, I've heard that before. I've heard that a lot before, especially like very similar to my last name. At least my maternal, my mom's maiden name. They changed it to Ellis Island too. It was a longer last name. And they shortened it to give it more consonants and more, you know, less vowels, like removing all of the things that make, I guess, what would have been the Anglo-Saxon people at Ellis Island an easier way to communicate. I don't know. It's a very interesting, you know, thing. I've heard that a lot, that names as they came from Europe to the Americas had been changed over time. Well, that's interesting. So Finnish.
Yeah.
And so you're now in, we talked a little bit off air, you're now in Amsterdam, right?
Right. Correct.
Yeah. Did you grow up in the US?
Yeah. I moved to Amsterdam 2.5 years ago only, actually. So I grew up in Colorado, in a suburb of Denver. And when I was 23, I just felt pretty bored. So I just felt like there wasn't opportunity for me in Colorado. And basically what I wanted to do is I wanted to work somehow in the video game industry. And when I was actually 16, I was like a freelance video game reviewer for like a Canadian website that I somehow found on the internet, just going to forums back in the day when that's how you made friends. And so I found some forum. It was called n-insanity.com. And I just started writing reviews for video games that I owned. And then eventually they would send me a video game to review. and then I'd review it. Then I got to keep the game. So most of these games were not games that I was interested in or wanted to play, but I thought that that was a cool enough sort of payment. Anyways, I wanted to like sort of continue doing that, but there was no like, there's no video game studio at the time. There was no video game studios in Colorado. The industry wasn't really present at all. So, you know, I went to university at Metropolitan State College. I think it was a college then. Now it's a university. But Metropolitan State College of Denver for a little bit. And I was like, what I'm trying to do is not going to really pan out for me here. So I decided to sort of cut and run. And I moved up to Seattle with my best friend. And Seattle has a lot of video game studios, like a tech hub, you know. And it's full of like more people that I was like, yeah, just sort of more my vibe, I guess. And so I moved up there and went to university at the University of Washington. And while I was in Seattle, I picked up a few sort of like, yeah, I didn't really get into the video game industry as I had sort of planned. But what I really wanted to do when I first moved there was to work in sort of like world building, you know, work in like the lore department, sort of video game, like writing, storytelling, this sort of thing, narrative design, somewhere in that capacity. And so I joined a LARP in Seattle. I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary Dark On. It's like based on the East Coast, and it follows like, yeah, it follows people with their like everyday lives. And then also they're in the like the LARP drama also. It's really compelling. I would recommend everyone to watch it. So Dark On, one of the people that was involved in the Dark On war game moved to Seattle, and then they formed a new sort of LARP by mixing the Dark On war game mechanics with a role playing, less role playing, but like a foam fighting sport called Belagarth, and fusing those together, they made Dargarth. And anyway, so it basically plays out like live action D&D. So every time that you would meet up, you would have your party. You would tell the elder that was running the event. You'd say who's in your party, and then you would have a land action. So you'd roll some dice, and depending on what like terrain the land that you were on, the dice roll would mean what you would encounter, right? So it'd be, okay, if you're in the swamp, then an 86 would mean this. But if you're in the plains, an 86 would mean that. So we had this sort of like stats for monsters that you would then fight, right? So then I started working on the monster manual. So fleshing out what those stats mean. Like, so you have a vampire, and a vampire, of course, or not necessarily, of course, but vampires are vulnerable to silver weapons. That makes sense. And when they kill someone, their health regenerates. Makes sense, right? Like, like all these are sort of like rules per monsters, but we wanted to like make a monster manual to like add some lore in there. So I started writing that because I was like, this would be a perfect thing that maybe I can then approach a game studio and say, hey, listen, I just filled out this monster manual for a LARP. This is my experience because I had no experience otherwise. So as I was working on this and just like sort of really having a difficult time, I was also working service industry jobs in Seattle and I was in community college at the time. And I was like, I think what's going to help me get better at this is like to study anthropology. And so I started studying anthropology, basically trying to get better at writing about like fictional cultures and stuff like that to fill up, basically to try to get better at filling out this monster manual. And then I just really, really got into anthropology. And so then I transferred from community college into University of Washington. And there I did my major in medical anthropology and global health. And I was really focused, like, so that degree was really focused on like the culture of healing and how different cultures experience healing in very different ways. And how like Western medicine treats things very differently. There's a lot of like pre-med in this program, basically to like learn to like empathize and like really just get better at that aspect of medicine that, you know, like you can't really get taught that in school, but this program was like a kind of way of forcing people to understand cultures, right? And so like then as I was like, well, I'm not necessarily trying to be a doctor. So I wasn't going on like that route. So then how I sort of pick and chose the courses I would take in my degree, I started selecting for like media theory, the cool cell phone cultures class I took, and like urban ethnographies. And so I sort of built this Frankenstein like cyborg anthropology degree. I was like really focused on, okay, humans and technology, we interface since the dawn of time, basically. Not the dawn of time, actually. I shouldn't say that as someone that studied anthropology. But humans have like co-evolved because of technology, right? And the word cyborg is short for cybernetic organism, which just means that someone that uses something that is not them as a tool, right? So something that's not like a part of their being. So using like just a stick to do something for you, that is a cyborg activity. So, you know, monkeys are then technically cyborgs in this way, and crows, lots of animals are cyborgs. Humans are absolutely cybernetic organisms. It's how we got where we are. Anyways, so then I was like really focused on this thing. I fleshed out all of my like anthropology credits. And my last year, I only needed a language. And I also chose anthropology because they have deep pockets for foreign study, because they really want anthropologists to go somewhere and experience a culture and stuff. So I chose to go to China, somewhere completely different than the US. And it was the last year, 2016, I think, the last year that the University of Washington had this sister program with Sichuan University in Chengdu, Sichuan. So it was like really cool because I would just pay tuition to University of Washington, and a Chinese student would pay their tuition to Sichuan University, and then we would just place so a program. So I went to Sichuan University for a year studying Mandarin, and then I got a scholarship through the Chang Foundation. And part of getting a scholarship was to have a personal research project. So then I was studying researching Chinese cell phone culture at the time, which was completely fascinating. But it was right when I was like preparing, like the summer before I was going to go to China, that I started really looking in, like I was just Googling all sorts of things, like Googling Chinese cell phone culture, Asian cell phone culture, African cell phone culture. I was just trying to see what there was that I could find about a sort of study or work that someone else had done. And then, you know, I'm looking at like all of these other concepts like mobile privatization and like just like technology culture, internet culture, all these things. So I somehow ended up in a wormhole that led me into, well, first it started off with, I found out that China was the first country to designate internet addiction as like a disease, or not a disease, sorry, a treatable thing. Like that it's a problem and they were developing a treatment for it. And then on top of that, learning from that, then I started to see the development of esports in China and how it was just like massive. And from being in Seattle, which is like a tech hub and a gaming hub, it really hadn't taken off there at all. So I didn't see it in front of me. So I was like, okay, wow, this is like a crazy thing. So then when I was in China, I really tried to check out all these internet cafes and stuff. And it's a whole nother vibe over there for sure. So after being in China and I came back to Seattle, I was like, this is coming our way for sure. This is something that is definitely going to be happening over here. How can I basically get myself in a way that when this really takes off, that I'm ready for it and not like chasing it per se. But then the curveball was thrown there that I, in my last 6 weeks in China, I met this really lovely Dutch girl and we really hit it off. And I was like, I got to get on a plane. I can't, you know, like she got there a little bit after I did. And so her return flight was a few months after mine. And I was like, I can't stick around. I gotta get on a plane. I gotta go back to the States. And so, she came to visit me and then we just played country tag for a little bit. And we decided, because of our nationalities, we can't stay in the same place for more than 3 months at a time. So let's get married. So then we can live in a place together and see if this thing works. So, in 2018, I moved to Amsterdam and we got married. And then I was really thinking, all right, great. Now I'm in Europe which has this sort of, I always thought was like an envious esports scene, but I moved to the country that does not have a very envious esports scene in Europe. And that is the Netherlands.
So that's where we're at today. After all of the world traveling and culture building and world building from LARPing, your story is very entertaining, at least for someone like me. There's so many things I can relate to, just from a different perspective of living life at a similar time frame. I was living in Hawaii while you were in China, studying cell phone, Chinese cell phone use. And so I kind of have, the same perspective of what was going on in the Eastern cultures, given like how many people from Korea, China, the Philippines were coming through Hawaii to travel and Chinatown in Hawaii and sort of what you were talking about. I can definitely relate to a lot of those things. Even the Colorado part, I was in, my parents were in the military. So when they got stationed at Fort Shafter, Fort Carson, they were at Fort Shafter in Hawaii and then Fort Carson, in Colorado Springs. I took some classes, and also the last class I needed to graduate was a language class. And I had to take that class at Colorado Springs, University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, to graduate, from the University of Hawaii. And a lot of our stories are very similar in that, I saw gaming while I was in Hawaii through StarCraft and Korean StarCraft, to play with Boxer and Life and all of the great players that, were at the top level, in 2015, 2016. But I never engaged with it offline. It was all online. So, GOM TV, Twitch TV, and that was like my engagement. I wasn't even a participant, really. I wasn't like someone who chatted or anything like that until like 2017. But I moved back to Austin. I grew up in Austin, and I started to pursue like video journalism for all different sorts of cultures. But when I first got that first taste of what a gaming event was like, that was when it was, you know, balls to the wall, full on the throttle. It's got to be esports and it's got to be gaming culture, because like you said, you saw the wave coming, and the wave was high right before the pandemic, really high. Unfortunately, you know, the pandemic did put a damper in that offline aspect, but it's still growing exponentially online, which goes into like what you're doing now as a freelance journalist. And, you know, you've done a lot while you've been in the esports space and gaming space while you're now in the Netherlands. But talk about, how did you get into writing stories for these different gaming outlets, including now Esports Insider?
Yeah. So like before the pandemic, I was working at a tech recruitment startup here in the Netherlands, and my contract was basically going to expire in end of March. So this time last year. And so I was in the midst of negotiating, okay, am I going to stay on? Like, what are we going to do? I just had a 6-month contract. So I was in the middle of this. Also at the same time, this time last year, I had just bought a plane ticket to go back to Seattle to visit for a month. So I had talked to the CEO. I was like, hey, I don't really know what's going to happen and all this stuff. Also, the company was in the process of being acquired. So basically he was no longer going to be the CEO. So discussions with him were going to sort of stop. So I was sort of really pressuring him. I was like, hey, like, am I going to have a contract? What am I going to do? Like, and then it was also at this time where, you know, the people started to slowly freak out about the pandemic and hearing about it taking over Italy and Spain. And one of my colleagues had just gotten back from Spain, and like everyone in our office had gotten sick, and we were all like, did we all just get the corona? So anyways, it was a very intense time in the Netherlands a year ago. So, ended up not getting my contract extended because everyone just tightened up their belts. You know, everyone, like so many people got let go. So many people just in general, across the board in every company, a lot of people cut a lot of costs because they didn't know how things were going to go. So I was one of those that got sort of let go, or just, yeah, my contract was allowed to expire, I guess is the nicest way to put that. And so I was like, well, all right. So now I'm stuck at home. I don't have a job. And trying to find another job is like, it was hard enough finding this job in the Netherlands, which is, it's a very difficult job market in Amsterdam, at least, especially because I moved here not so long ago. I'm not Dutch. My Dutch is pretty good, but definitely not close to native. And I just don't have a big network of Dutch people. My network is mostly on the internet because that's how I connect with people back home in the States and then also in China. And so my network just isn't going to help me get a job here. So then that was when I was like, well, so now I am unemployed and there's nothing else to do. I'm only going to be at home. So I decided, all right, I'm really going to try to figure out how to get myself into esports somehow. And I thought what I wanted to do was to cover esports stories, because I had been researching it since I moved to the Netherlands. I was like, where's the scene here? I was trying to find it, couldn't find it really. And then slowly as my Dutch got a little bit better and I could start searching for it in Dutch, I would see a little bit, but no one was really telling any stories about it, right? There would be little updates here and there on some websites, but the scene was pretty disorganized. And I mean, I don't think anyone's really making any money. And like, especially with like sponsorships, no big sponsorships, all these things happening. So luckily for me, because of the pandemic, that sort of remote work became much more of a possibility. So I was looking at a few places that I thought about applying. And then I had been talking with Rich Huggin from Hipmarker. And I was like, hey, I just worked at, did marketing for a tech recruitment startup. You guys like don't do recruitment, but like I understand sort of the job, like job market industry, basically. Like I would love to work for you guys. And he was like, well, you know, we don't have any positions or whatever, but we're just starting to upgrade our candidate offering thing. So we're gonna do videos. So if you could make a video, then you'll be a candidate spotlight. So I just looked this up the other day, and I think it was March 15th. I think it was March 15th is when I sent my video to Hipmarker, and then they tweeted it. And then I got a few DMs from some people, and one of those was by Sam Cook, who's the MD of Esports Insider. And he was like, hey, I really liked your video. Like, let's talk. Let's, you know, see if there's anything that we can do together. And he's a very busy guy. So our conversations were pretty slow, but I also had nothing better to do. So I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to do and like slowly chatting with him. And then it was around that time also that they announced ESI Digital Summit, which was their first digital event. So I pitched an idea to Sam, and I was like, hey, I know you're like, you don't really know how we can work together, but how about you give me a press pass for ESI Digital Summit, and I'll create some content for that. And maybe you can use it, maybe not, but at least it'll give me something to do, something to work with. And then you can also then see what I can do, because I don't have anything to show for myself in the esports realm of things anyways. So I got a press pass. I contacted a lot of the speakers that had been announced, and I just sent them a cold email saying, hey, I'm doing this thing, trying to get into Esports Insider. It'd mean a lot if you would take some time and have an interview with me, and I'm going to create some content about it and whatever. So then I produced my own like short series covering one track of ESI Digital Summit and trying to like bring home the like main points. So if you didn't attend it, that you could read it and then sort of get the gist of things, and also try to, it was like reverse promotional content. So like if you missed out on it, you would then read this and see sort of the stuff that they were talking about, so that maybe for the next one, you would be interested in attending. So then Digital Summer rolls around, and Sam is like, hey, we'd like to bring you on as a freelancer to do some stuff for the digital event, promotional stuff. So then I sort of did around the same stuff, but then I produced the ESI, what was it? The Regional Esports Market Reports, I think. So so ESI Digital Summer focused on five different regions. So it was APAC, the Middle East, Europe, Latin America, North America. So I reached out to a bunch of panelists that we had announced from each region, interviewed them, and then tried to like present these sort of like, I mean, they're pretty long. I wouldn't call them long form, but they're pretty long. These pieces where I tried to address, based on my conversations with people, the opportunities and the challenges. And then I worked with Rich Huggin again from Hitmarker to talk about like the employment size for each sector or each region, to be like, okay, here's the opportunities and challenges, but also here's like the job opportunities, because this is also an interesting aspect of that. So then I worked on that. Then I got sort of my contract extended as a journalist. So then I started covering a few more things, being able to interview more people. I was, because I'm located in the Netherlands, I was able to tour the Team Liquid Alienware training facility in Utrecht, like right the day before they unveiled it. And so I wrote that up for Esports Insider. And then I got picked up again for ESI Digital Winter as the multimedia content executive. So because I did a lot of graphic design before. So then I was working on creating videos, promotional videos for ESI Digital Winter, and also producing like social media graphics and the stream overlays and all sorts of, basically somebody would need something done, multimedia, and I was one of the people that would execute that. And so now I'm doing the same thing for ESI Digital Spring, but also writing a lot more for Esports Insider. And we're talking about hopefully taking things to the next level.
Yeah. Yeah, you've... looking back at like all the things that you've done throughout going to college and studying in China, finding the love of your life, moving all the way across the world to the other side of the planet, similar hemisphere, obviously, but where you're at now, it kind of makes sense from all of the things you've done, creating, being a storyteller in the LARPing world, to studying technology and its rapidly exponential growth through Asian markets, to now producing one of the like mainstream sources when it comes to esports news and entertainment coverage. Do you have an idea of like where you see the growth going for esports in the next 5 years? Do you see, with all of these companies starting to build facilities, do you see the offline esports functions meeting or kind of just not growing as fast as the online components?
Yeah, that's a good question. Something that I kind of think about is, so I honestly haven't been to an esports bar that works and that makes money, like that concept. I don't know if it'll ever pop off, but something following along those lines where, so let's say, okay, so we have sports and then we have sports bars, or we have like live action sports at an arena. And then if you can't get a ticket there, you can go to a sports bar and you can see that, right? For esports, what I think is maybe something more along the lines of, not necessarily an esports bar, but like an off event LAN event, right? So like a place where you can still be on your computer, because that's where you're going to watch. And also when you're watching esports, you're probably doing other things, because everything like on the internet, you're never just doing one thing at a time. So having sort of events like this, where if that's what we can call tailgating, right? I think that's like, I don't know if there'll be a business model to support that, but I think that that will be a thing where offline, if offline events never return, I think that will be a big detriment to the industry, and it'll change it forever for sure. I mean, I think everyone's sort of I'm sold on esports story starts with going to a physical event. So, but there's a lot of places that don't have arenas still, and a lot of places that have a team that don't have arenas. But if you could basically build facilities with a guest area to be able to hold these, what I sort of just described as like tailgate events. That is what I could see a good use, a good like mixed use for facilities, right? Or even like a co-working space or something like that. Like just a gathering place for esports fans to be together. Yeah, I mean, of course, having beer involved is always going to help make money, but like just basing a bar around that concept, I don't think that's going to pan out. But just being able to like be together and support your team, but not be at the event, right? The arena. I think that these sort of, I kind of want to just call them like satellite things all over the place. I think that that could be something interesting, because also, I mean, we don't know how long this pandemic is going to remain a threat, right? So being able to like keep things in smaller numbers in this way, like keeps it a little bit more future proof, right? So basically just allowing people to experience, even if it's just like a mini experience of just having basically like, I mean, I don't think a movie theater is the best place for this, but like, you know, a giant screen so you can watch it and you can be around a bunch of people, just like being at a sports bar with giant TVs and everybody's watching the same thing and having sharing that energy. I think that that can definitely work for esports, but I think it's not going to resemble a sports bar. I think it's going to more resemble either like a internet cafe type thing where everyone has their own computer type stuff.
This business model, I think, I've heard it before and I've seen it implemented. I think the trouble with, you know, the satellite locations and sort of like remote viewing aspects of in between the venue and let's say, you know, somebody who could commute relatively easily to the venue to see the event. The experience in the in that remote location hasn't been perfected yet. And you mentioned like, you know, like a larger display or some form of like engagement there. I've dabbled in this idea a few different times. I don't think the Overwatch League or even the Call of Duty League has the audience to support a remote viewing event. You know, someone has to put the money down to cover that trial event. And I've seen the failures, I think I've seen as well, at least in these barcade situations, is that they try to do all of the platforms. They'll do League of Legends, Smash Brothers, every single thing. And they don't niche down to a particular property or platform. And so as a result, they have to cut space on certain things. And ultimately a bar is a bar. So, I mean, you make more money serving drinks and playing hip hop music than if you displayed video gaming broadcasts on TVs. Being said, the pop-up shop idea and making it easier for people to have community, still enjoy it, but not spend as much money as it would be to commute to the actual venue. That I think is the resolution you're talking about, where it does bring people who are generally online offline to pay a higher ticket than, you know, just going on Twitch and watching something for free.
Right. Or also just being able to like, I mean, yeah, when you're watching an event, you're also scrolling Twitter. And so just being able to like, A, if you're going to like to be able to be in a room with all these people and also then, yeah, just be able to be like, yo, follow me, right? We're sitting next to each other, follow me. So then you have just like immediate, like instant engagement there. But then also, yo, did you see this tweet or whatever? Like being able to like not just have to do everything, like communicate all the way remotely, but to be able to do a back and forth, right? Like back in the day, I used to really hate people that talked about the internet offline. I'm talking 10 years ago. Like before I moved to Seattle, I really had an annoyance of people that would pull out their phone to show me a video or something. And yeah, I don't know why. I was like, dude, just like send it to me on MySpace and I'll watch it when I get home. Like I don't want to break up this thing. But now it's like completely normalized. That is such a normal part of everyday life of, yo, let me show you something real quick. Or I don't remember. Let me look this up really quick. Like the cell phone is just a part of us. And that's, and also just the internet. The internet is just a part of our culture. We basically can't live without it. So just really embracing that and like having like, you know, even just consider calling it like an internet bar, not internet cafe, or even internet cafe so that people can be there all day. Also completely fine, you know? And like, I think that we got Nerd Street Gamers in the US with their local host, right? That's their sort of product similar. And then Vindex has Belong, which is also like these places hold promise, right? Because they also have another function outside of just showing events, right? They're there also as like, you know, you can come play casually, you can buy merch, you can buy other retail products. There's a lot of things that can happen in one location. So doing sort of Monday night Overwatch or something like that, it doesn't necessarily shut that place down. Like in Seattle, I was the bar manager at a nerd bar. It's the best way to put it. It was like a board game bar. And so it was chill. And like, we would put on Evo and we would put on some esports events, but nobody came there just to watch it really. Like they would come, but like they also wouldn't drink. They wouldn't spend any money, you know? So like, it was just a bunch of people that would come to enjoy the community, but then the business didn't make any money. And then the place is like sort of full. And that's not, I mean, you can't like, that's not good for the business, right? People are there to like, they need to basically pay their rent or help us pay rent so that we can keep doing this. So that was a big problem that I learned there, was just like monetizing certain audiences with event space is pretty hard when you've pigeonholed yourself in a certain way. So just like esports organizations, they've all diversified, right? They haven't pigeonholed themselves, because if they did, they're gone. So also having a location that can be multi-use, you know, I mean, it could even just be at the YMCA or something like that. You know, it could just be in the auditorium somewhere. It could be like, I don't know if that would be that successful, but you really don't need that much. Like DreamHack started in the basement of an elementary school in Sweden, right? And they just connected all their computers together. That's really all people need. However, esports as an industry needs to make money and needs money that people spend in it to stay in the industry and not just get paid out to winners and then it doesn't get put back in, you know? Like, so we really need businesses that can receive this money and put it back, like, and cycle it around and not just, okay, it goes to us, we put it at this big prize pool to get attention, someone wins that tournament, and it goes out. And then we have to do it all over again.
Yeah, absolutely. And man, I could talk about that topic forever, but as we wrap up here, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about how people can follow the articles that you're writing, also how they can get involved in ESI Spring, the upcoming event, and anything that you would like to like help people connect with you online.
Yeah. So, I write for, Esports Insider. You can find that at esportsinsider.com. And then while you're on that webpage, you can find all the details for ESI Digital Spring, which is our fourth digital event that we've done since the pandemic. And that's at the end of March, March 30th and 31st. We're gonna have we're announcing amazing speakers every day. And yeah, you can learn more on there and also find out ways to get involved with the conference as well. We're likely going to be doing at least two more, ESI Digital Summer and ESI Digital Winter again. You can find all those details on the website as well. And yeah, you can find me on Twitter at HeyCafe, HAEKAFAE, and on LinkedIn by looking up my name, Kerry Wanernen.
Awesome. Again, this has been Kerry Wanernen on the Esports Business Network podcast. Thank you for listening.
Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.